Hello, and welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UM FM, the only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. I'm not Teebs. I'm Jason Pajak there for everybody who is wondering. Teebs is running a little bit behind. We have a little bit of snow here in Winnipeg, and as soon as there is more than like two flakes of snow on the ground here in the city, for some reason people forget how to drive. He'll get here when he gets here. You've got, obviously, anybody who's listening to this who is a hockey fan probably knows who this is. Tate McRae's Greedy, the song that I, you know, like many others, found her through, but a fantastic song. Fade that out here. Tate McRae obviously was one of the all-star team captains during the NHL all-star game, which happened recently, along with Michael Bublé, Justin Bieber, and Will Arnett. We had talked at length about that last week, and we got a pretty jam-packed show for you. Actually, there were a lot of news coming out. Obviously, the World Juniors, there was a press conference in London from the London Police Service, and basically it's something that really shocked me and shocked a lot of people that know about cases like this and just kind of how police forces tend to handle, you know, controversy and the pressures that they have gotten in the last, you know, particularly the last five to 10 years, particularly around cases like this. They came out and said something and did something that I was not expecting. I was expecting a press conference, but I wasn't expecting what was said at the press conference. Obviously, we have to talk about all the reports coming out around the Arizona Coyotes, one of our favorite topics to talk about on this show, and particularly in light of some of the comments made by one Marty Walsh, and the comments that were coming out of the press conference of Gary Bettman, when he was asked about that and talked a little bit about the Arizona Coyotes situation in light of the news out of Salt Lake City, Utah, and some of the rumblings that have been coming from people like Elliot Friedman, Kevin Weeks, and a few others. So I actually got a few other things to go over here as well. I'm going to get things kicked off. Obviously, the Elias Lindholm and Sean Monahan trades we're going to get to, and so a little bit of international hockey talk as well. So I want to get things kicked off. I want to save the London Police thing and the Arizona Coyotes situation for Teebs when he shows up here. I want to talk a little bit about the Elias Lindholm trade and the Sean Monahan trade as well. One second here. Sorry, my phone was ringing. I think Teebs is trying to call me. You know, I want to talk a little bit about those trades, obviously. Bring Sean Monahan trade up here first, because first trade since the Monahan trade, bringing in a guy who has a pretty significant injury history, was a guy that routinely flirted with kind of the 30-goal mark back in the day. Oh, Teebs is locked out of the building. Sean Monahan often flirted with 30 goals in his time with the Calgary Flames, where he wore an A, kind of the guy that you'd think that Kevin Cheveldayoff would go after, a little bit of a bigger body, has some physicality or can have some physicality to his game. But really, you look at it right off the bat, 22 goals to start off his career, but immediately hit the 30-goal mark the year after in 2014-15 when he was with the Calgary Flames. Obviously, that was when he had Johnny Gaudreau skating side saddle with him. Then he had a couple 27s. He got back up to the 30 mark. But it's 2019-20 where things kind of started to tip over. He only played 70 games that year, still put up 22 goals, 26 assists, 48 points. And that's where the numbers start to get a little bit worrisome. 2021, obviously the strange COVID bubble year that we all remember. 50 games, 28 points, only 10 goals. The 50 games is a bit of a concerning number. Then he only played 65 in 21-22 and 25 last year when he played his first season with the Montreal Canadiens. Still put up 17 points in those 25 games, but it's a far cry. 6 goals, 11 assists. It's a far cry from where he was even, you know, 4 years prior with the Calgary Flames. So the injuries are a bit of a concern when it comes to Sean Monahan. And that's, you know, you can chalk a lot of, you know, the lack of production up to when he's with the Montreal Canadiens to the fact that he's playing for the Montreal Canadiens. And that's a team that really does not put up a lot of points. You know, you think, okay, maybe he can go to a different situation. He can come to the Jets where, you know, it's a bit of a deeper core, deeper lineup. However, with the type of game that they're playing now, you know, he's not going to be in a position where he's going to score a ton of goals. It's the defense-first organization. I was a little bit worried about this trade insofar as where is he going to fit into the lineup? This is a team, obviously, the Jets, the last few weeks have had to deal with missing Mark Scheifele before the All-Star break, as well as Gabe Vilardi. Those are two big holes to fill in the lineup that, you know, had a demonstrable effect on the team. You know, you look at the advanced metrics, and Mark Scheifele is an incredibly important and integral piece to this organization and the way that they produce points. You know, missing him is definitely going to impact this team's ability to score goals, put up points. Really, he's picked up the 200-foot game a little bit more. But really, what's he going to be able to do on the back? Like, what's the team going to be able to do without him? And really, what the advanced metrics show is not a lot. The benefits that I think when you look at Sean Monahan, you look at the advanced stats, and obviously I'm a stats guy. He's got good possession metrics. He gets pucks to the front of the net. He gets his chances. The stats with Montreal are a bit of an aberration, but the big issue really is where is he going to fit into the lineup, and where is he going to, what's going to happen to the chemistry of the lineup now that he's there? This is a team that I didn't see as needing to add anything, whether it be at the deadline or prior to that. It's a pretty deep lineup. Obviously, you're going to lose games when you're missing Mark Scheifele and Gabe Vilardi. Gabe Vilardi's come in. He's been a fantastic addition to the roster. Mark Scheifele obviously is an integral piece to the team. But, you know, you've got, you know, a pretty solid bottom six, probably one of the best bottom sixes in the league. And then your top six, you've got a lot of, you know, talent up front. Where does a guy like Sean Monahan fit into that mix? You don't want to put him in the bottom six because then you have to move around those pieces on the fourth line. You have to move Adam Lowry out of the bottom six into a different role, as Teebs is now in the building. you were locked out there for a while, eh?
Yeah, I was not happy, but whatever.
I'll get your mic turned on there.
One, two, yeah, we're okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Sean Monahan trade, if you want to hop in on that.
No. I mean, yes, but no.
You're not happy with the trade?
I'm fine with the trade. I'm happy we didn't give up what they gave up to get Lindholm in Vancouver.
Oh, man.
But end of the day, I don't know if he's your second-line center.
I don't think so either. I think that you, with where, you know, I just have the stats up here. He hasn't played a full season, like a full 82, since 2016-17. Well, and, you know,
injuries aside, and I'm not going to complain too much about injuries aside, but injuries aside, I just don't think he brings the scoring you need as a second line center. I mean, can he
not
score?
Anymore.
Yes. But
But
he's your 3F coming in into the zone every shift.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Because he was with, you know, Gaudreau and then Lindholm. Well, he was with Lindholm for a little bit, right? Because he kind of...
I think so.
Because it was like the Tkachuk era started, and then that's kind of when he started. They were like, okay, you can move off. Yeah. And obviously he was gone last year. So he had a little bit of Lindholm, a little bit of Tkachuk. But like,
yeah,
even then, in those years, he put up, you know, he went through it. He had 82 points in 78 games in 18-19, and then 48 points, 28, 23, 17.
Well, and again, some of that coincided with, again, hip surgery, wrist surgery. Yeah. Like, he was hurt. No taking anything away from that.
A hip surgery is the kind of injury and kind of surgery that messes you up long term.
Well, yeah, it'll slow you down for sure. But again, my issue is that if you're going to play that role in the second on the second line anyway, you're going to have to be the Paul Stastny, where if you're going to go directly to the front of the net, you got to have guys that can get it to you there.
Yeah.
And take nothing away from Ehlers, take nothing away from Perfetti. They can certainly do that. But the issue is that you don't have a guy like Laine who draws all that attention away from the middle of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you move a Kyle Connor down there. Maybe you, I don't know, figure out a way to get Iafallo on that line in order to open up a little bit more space for you. But at the end of the day, you got to create that space down the middle. And right now I didn't see it from Monahan, especially in that game against the Penguins where they turned it up ice pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And right now Daily Faceoff has him on the second line with Cole Perfetti and Nikolai Ehlers. Which that's not – like, obviously, Paul Stastny was fantastic with Nikolai Ehlers, particularly during the playoff run, because he was the exactly like you said. He gets to the front of the net. He creates space.
Right.
He, you know, can jam things. He can jam pucks in. So, you know, that mixes well with Nikolai Ehlers. But Cole Perfetti on the other side, you've got guys that can wheel – and are good in transition.
But Perfetti's not going to open up the ice like Laine did, though. That's the thing. Is Laine was an automatic shooter. Everybody had to keep an eye on him, right?
Exactly. So you have defense sliding over to protect him, so that gives Ehlers more space.
Right.
That gives, in this analogy, Monahan more space. But
that's where Connor could come in, though, if he's going to play on that line. If you bump Connor down, I hate to say it, if you bump Connor down and let Perfetti be the guy who's carrying the puck into the zone as the wheel guy, you all of a sudden have a legitimate shooter on one side who can take away a lot of that attention and then allow Monahan to get set up in the middle.
Yeah, and that's something that I think Paul Maurice would not have done, because Paul Maurice was very married to that Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler group.
Right.
But I think Rick Bonus is probably a little bit more amenable to, you know, you don't have a first line, second line. You have two top lines and...
Well, and he said he wants to give the line combinations a little bit more real estate to see how they do. I get where he's going with that, but if you don't generate any offense tonight from that line, any offense whatsoever in terms of scoring a goal or at least chipping in a couple of points, might be time to look at some experimenting here.
Yeah, and for me, I'm more concerned about messing up with the chemistry and the way that this team has gelled this year with the lineup that they did have. And obviously,
So when Connor's out, though, and Ehlers and Velarde are playing together, like, they looked fantastic together.
Exactly.
So again, make the obvious choice here and move Ehlers up, drop Connor back, and let's see how that works. Because, again, Perfetti's not going to have a problem finding Connor open.
No.
It's just a matter of finding...
And that's the guy he is, right? Like,
right.
You have two guys in Ehlers and Perfetti who move the puck really well.
Right.
Why are you putting them on the same line?
But that's the question that needs to be answered now. So again, I have no problem if they're going to give a little bit more slack. They've got enough points, a decent enough lead that on Nashville, who's in fourth place, a decent enough lead that you can play a little bit here. But at the same time, though, you don't want Colorado, you don't want Dallas to move too far ahead.
Yeah.
Knowing that, again, you got to hunt one of them down at some point if you want home ice advantage in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to have to meet one of them eventually
when
you get to the playoffs. So did you want to switch over to the control side?
Well, I don't care. Whatever you want to do. Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you wanted to set anything up or...
No, I mean, there's not a lot, but I mean, we can switch if you want. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, sure.
Because we're going to go through the big story now next, because I got all the notes on that.
Oh,
so.
Yes.
Let's have some fun. So I don't have any sort of special knowledge, news, anything other than the fact that, folks, we are going to go through and we are probably going to have... Is that better for headphones over there?
It has been buzzing for like a month.
But it sounds like there's only one side of the headphones working, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit. It might be something with the port here that...
Do you want to try that out? Is the other mic okay? I was going to say, you've never said anything, so...
Well, it's never bothered me.
Is that any better? Well, try four. Right beside you. Is that any better for headset and for... No? Kind of? Maybe? Sort of?
No, it's still just like one a little bit unbalanced.
Okay, well, we'll talk to GM Jared about that, I guess, in terms of what's going to happen. But folks, let's get into the big story, though, because, again, Jason and I were talking about this prior to the show early this morning about how we were excited to discuss this. But
yeah.
We finally got some news of the London Police Service on Monday on what was happening in the investigation into the 2018 Hockey Canada scandal, which there was a lot said, but there was very little substance to work with when in those words. And there's a reason for that, but let's get to what was said first. So I want to start off with the obvious in that the London Police Service, through Police Chief Tai Truong, acknowledged that they failed in the 2018 investigation.
Which is huge. It is a huge admission by them, and to come out and actively apologize to the victim.
Truong stated, quote, "I want to extend on behalf of the London Police Service my sincerest apology to the victim, to her family, and for the amount of time that it has taken to reach this point," noting the original investigation took place between June 2018 and February 2019, where it was, quote, "determined that there were insufficient grounds to lay a charge. This decision led to the case being closed," unquote.
Yeah, that is something that's kind of unprecedented. Like, it's really hard to get a police force first to admit that they were wrong about something. That's just kind of the way that it is with, you know, police generally. But
sure, yeah.
This is it's very clear that they know that they have lost a bit of faith in the community. Like, trust in the police in North America is at an all-time low.
And they know
that they have to do something. They have a new police. We were talking about, this morning, they have a new police chief that needs to turn things around. It's very obvious. Like, it's a no-brainer to apologize, but it shows a lot, I think.
I'm only going to jump in here because, to me, I understand what they're doing, but from my perspective, they were part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get apologizing for the failure, but I wanted them to own it more and say, we messed, it out loud, we messed up.
Yeah, I think that's for the independent review
that's
coming to really hammer home, like, this was a mishandling of this case.
Yeah, because I get that.
Very clearly, the evidence was there, they just didn't dig far enough to find it, or didn't, I think something happened where they shook the right tree and the evidence fell out and they were able to charge it, lay these charges, or they looked at that evidence at the time and didn't think that it was good enough.
Well, obviously what happened to Hockey Canada made a huge difference in terms of what went on. Having the NHL now pressuring everybody to investigate further certainly helps. But I think that just having more people talking about it has brought more evidence to light now. And again, that's where it leads to Dylan Dubé, Cal Foote, Alex Formanton, Carter Hart, and Michael McLeod were each charged with sexual assault, and McLeod was also charged with a second count of sexual assault for, quote, being a party to the offense, unquote. Now, a lot of people are going to go, if he committed it, he's a party to it. But this is different, though. Detective Sergeant Catherine Dunn explained that in the second charge was a party to the offense charge, which is, quote, in relation to aiding someone else in committing the offense, unquote. Meaning that McLeod, while being charged with sexual assault, either aided in the sexual assault happening by encouraging others, or helped others participate in the sexual assault in some way.
Yep. So he could have...
In short, six major charges to five individuals whose lawyers have all said they're going to fight the charges vigorously.
Yeah.
But,
that
they have to say that.
Exactly.
Dan also addressed the math problem, which might be puzzling you. As you probably recall, eight players were originally identified. Not identified, but eight players were originally quoted as being... These were the people that committed the sexual assault. She explained, again, this is Detective Sergeant Catherine Dunn explaining, quote, "We have laid all the charges that we have reasonable grounds for, and we've had varying levels of participation in the investigation, but I won't provide specifics about who cooperated and who didn't." That right there is a damning statement.
Yeah. So that to me speaks to, and this happens all the time, when there are cases like this where there's multiple people involved, somebody rolls and gives the information in exchange for something.
Right.
Somebody who might have been in the room but did not participate might have said, "These are the people you need to go talk to. This is what I know. This is what I have."
Or who has seen the video.
Or has seen the video.
Yeah.
And they, to save themselves, make a deal to get more people that are... this is the kind of thing, like, these... Cases like this, more often than not, die on the vine.
Sure,
because they will not, the courts will not waste their time and resources on a case they don't think they can win.
Right.
If they do not think, if the Crown does not think that there is a good chance of winning this, or that this case could result in a guilty verdict or something, they're not going to bring it forward, because that's just going to be adding to the backlog of, you know, crimes that have not been tried and prosecuted, and, you know, all for it, as dark as it seems, it's a case that could look like it's a waste of money. So the fact that this is going forward.
Okay, but here's the catch, though. And again, I'm not denying anything what you said, but here's the catch, though, because I have to wonder that if the investigation, when the report comes out from the investigation, if it will note who is uncooperative, because the NHL basically laid the foundation down that if you do not cooperate, we are still going to pursue some sort of avenue of justice for this.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about guys not participating now in this investigation, I'm sorry. I'll say it as nicely as I can. You deserve to have the book thrown at you.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll have to see what happens from that. The lawyers for the man in this case agreed to reconvene on April 30th, and the judge in charge of the proceeding, issued a publication ban on the case before dismissing the parties, which I understand why, but the ban is going to prevent the London Police Service, obviously, from speaking about a lot of the stuff in the press conference. And there's legitimately going to be nothing profound discovered or talked about prior to the April 30th meeting of these lawyers. So issuing a publication ban on this seems highly suspicious, in that either they're looking to try and minimize the amount of damage in what could be a very public display of awfulness, or there's something else going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of at this point.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the reality of, you know, they want potentially to get rid of a bit of a headache in terms of, you know, the reporter, like, because, like, reporters were camped out outside.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not doubting,
like,
that.
This is a high-profile case. Yep. It's going to be something where there's going to be a lot of attention, a lot of cameras, TSN, Sportsnet, you know, every single news outlet in Canada is going to have cameras and reporters there with microphones shoved in people's faces.
Well, I mean, Rick Westhead will probably be camping out on somebody's lawn.
He should have a front row seat.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also think that we also need to recognize that there is the potential, like, the victim who wants to remain nameless and just be referred to as the victim.
Well, she has agreed to participate in the investigation.
Yeah, exactly.
She has agreed to have her recognized as EM, whatever that means.
Yeah. But, you know, a publication ban could be done to protect potentially her identity from getting out there and becoming more obvious.
Well, yeah, that
right?
could be.
Because, like, it takes only a few pieces of information to figure out who somebody is.
So people have, again, speculation has run wild. What did they actually do? Like, we don't know what they did. We have no idea. So Katie Strang was from The Athletic was on the February 2nd edition of CBC's Front Burner with Damon Fairless. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't know that fantastic show, you know, podcast, fantastic show that sort of dives into the major details of the news of that day. She spoke about what reporters know prior to the publication ban. She spoke about what reporters knew going into this. Are you ready for this? Because this is legitimately, I can't, before we go on, mm-hmm. folks, if you have young children around, you may want to turn the volume down.
Trigger
here.
Warning here for people.
Right. So this is exactly what she said on the program. This is from the transcript. Quote, she was spit on, that her buttocks were slapped, that she was degraded, humiliated, laughed at, and intimidated by players who said she had who she said had golf clubs in the room. They had a golf outing the next day, and that she had retreated to the bathroom at several points of the night, that she was disassociating, that she was crying, and that on multiple occasions that she was showing signs of distress, that players had sort of coaxed and encouraged her to stay in the room and continue to, you know, engage in these sexual acts, and she made very clear in the lawsuit complaint that she did not consent to, unquote.
They treated her like an object.
Correct. And
not as a human being.
And I am legitimately going to say right now, if that's the only testimony that I had to hear, they'd all be going to jail.
Yes.
Sorry. Whatever the sentence is, I don't care. You're all going somewhere.
I know some of these guys might be some people's heroes out there. They're monsters.
Unfortunately, yes.
Like, there's no two ways around it. Like, they were a bunch of...
And that account was apparently relayed to somebody at the Globe and Mail. I didn't get the name of who it was, but that was apparently recounted in the Globe and Mail as well. Mm-hmm.
Like,
so,
like, that's when we talk about, like, a culture problem.
This is exactly
the fact that this incident was just compounded and compounded, so, and they were feeding off of each other, and they felt the entitlement that they could do this.
Is it Robin Doolittle? Is that who the other person is? Robin Doolittle? Yeah, she was the other one covering it. I think she's from the Globe as well. But she was also on an earlier edition of Front Burner, and she said they have the text messages. The lawyers have the text messages where the players are basically telling the victim, don't say anything about this.
Yeah.
Now, again, she said that's text messages don't have anything to do with guilt.
Yeah.
But what they're basically doing at that point is showing that they're covering it up.
Yes, exactly. And the fact that there's this video where she says that it was all consensual. One, she was very intoxicated and obviously under duress.
So, yeah, this is not good. And for these five players, Dubé, Foote, Formanton, Hart, and McLeod, this may be the very end of any professional career they have.
I would say it's almost a certainty at this point.
Now, as much as I hate it, the Flyers, the Devils, and the Flames have been informed by the NHL they're going to receive salary cap relief because these players aren't on their team. Do I think that the NHL should be responsible for this and force these teams to absorb that hit? Yes, because again, if this has been part of their history, you deserve to take the pain along with it. But we can't force them to do that.
And obviously, a lot of teams knew because the very clear fact that Formanton went from a very promising young player
to
being ostracized from the league.
Relegated to the Swiss League.
Exactly.
NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman told reporters during All-Star Weekend that the league was going to, quote, await the conclusion of the judicial proceedings, unquote, before making a determination on the player's future. Again, that's just legal speak for we're not going to do anything until we see what happens. In the bigger picture, though, all members, doesn't matter who you are, whether you were involved or not, all members of the 2018 World Junior Team remain suspended from playing, coaching, officiating, or volunteering with Hockey Canada-sanctioned international competitions at any event. Hockey Canada has put their foot down. Mm-hmm. You are not going to escape this punishment, even if you weren't involved.
Yep. And that's another piece where if there are people that know something and still have not taken part, that might be another avenue.
And Cale Makar is now bothered because he's going, what about next year's four country thing that we're playing? Mm-hmm. They have to get okay from Hockey Canada to play in that. And Hockey Canada is saying no.
Yeah.
So Cale Makar might miss. Not only that, if this goes into 2026 when they're saying the trial could start, he could eventually end up missing the Olympics as well.
So that is, it's a pretty strong mechanism to get guys to go to each other, and like a guy like Cale Makar to go to his teammates from 2018 and say, if you know something, you have to talk now.
Right. Like, I want to go play. This is affecting me. You idiots need to figure this out.
Exactly.
So an ugly, ugly situation in London. I'm sure it's going to get worse. Obviously, it can't get much worse before the 30th unless somebody starts talking to the mainstream media and public and going away from the publication ban. But at the end of the day, there's going to be heads that roll over this, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what can you do? Speaking about heads going to roll, we got about half an hour left now. Cause again, I was late only because I got locked out of the building and...
Was it those doors?
Yeah, it was those doors just over there. Like, they're always open. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to rush up the stairs and get into the... No, locked. Completely locked. Three people walked by, banged on the door, and none of them even looked at me. So I was like, you jerks. Anyway, that's all good. The other big story that came out this week from both the All-Star Game and into this week, the Arizona Coyotes appear to be out of time in the Arizona desert based upon everything that everyone has seen, heard, and witnessed, except for one Gary Bettman, who still seems to be in the Coyotes' corner. However, if you feel like Bettman is a bit of a snake in the grass, he looks like he might be playing that role to a T right now. Mm-hmm. So here's what's going on with that. If you haven't heard any of the information, there's a lot going on with this, and it actually happened today that something came down the chute today. Alex Marullo told the NHL he's prepared to purchase the land in North Phoenix that they identified for a new arena by submitting an application for the state trust land. We already spoke about that. It's up north near Scottsdale northwest Phoenix.
I've seen satellite images and it's a pretty good location.
Yeah, 200 acres in terms of what they're looking at, okay? The problem, though, is they may not get the land. And here's why.
Yep.
If the application is approved, the land will then go to auction where other bidders could buy the land or bump up the price to a point where Marullo simply stops bidding.
Yep.
The Arizona State Land Department Board of Appeals met today, and Marullo's application through his development company, Miracle Development, was not on the agenda. Which means that they didn't get heard for a potential purchase of land in terms of trying to get this appeal for this land to go up for auction. The next meeting is not till March 7th now.
Like, it's... Even if they get the land, even if they...
Oh, we got more. Like, we got more. According to the Coyotes, the application for 200 acres of state land just northwest of Loop 101 on Scottsdale Road. It was filed in June 2023 by the Fenmore Craig Law Firm. What the hell has been going on for the last 8 months if they filed it in June? What have you been doing since
he bought the team?
Well, again, that's reportedly Marullo and Gary Bettman had a conversation at the All-Star Game weekend where Bettman told reporters, quote, Alex Marullo as recently as last week told me that he was certain he was going to get this done. And I don't make it a practice of contradicting owners unless I have hard facts to the contrary, Bettman said. And I'm both hopeful and reasonably confident that he's going to do what he says, unquote. A little bit of doubt in there. But here's the catch now. You might be rolling your eyes at what Bettman just stated. Here's the funny thing, though. Bettman is saying all the right things to look and sound supportive because if the NHL decides that they've had enough of the charade in the desert, they can either force Marullo to sell,
they have the power to do.
Right. They can take over the franchise and negotiate a sale like they did before, which is what they did when they were in bankruptcy, and or pull his membership in the NHL as a franchise completely. Mm-hmm. But all those would likely require a pile of legal battles, and what Gary is doing is setting the NHL up in a fully supportive, we gave him every chance we could stance, so they can't be sued by Marullo for basically undermining his efforts.
Yep.
As Elliot Friedman wrote in 32 Weeks this week, or 32 Thoughts, 32 Weeks, 32 Thoughts this week, quote, the commish isn't going to say or do anything Marullo can use against him. He's going to make sure no one can argue the NHL wasn't anything but 100% supportive, even though more and more it looks like the league's lost faith.
Yep.
Where there's lots of hope, Phoenix Suns owner Matt Ishbia is the long-term answer. It's going to be on his terms when the team is officially for sale. Leverage through silence, as one source said. Unquote.
Also, Ishbia has said very recently he has no interest in buying the Coyote because he just paid a boatload of money to do all of the renovations to the Footprint Center to make it ready, like make it one of the like a great basketball arena, and they're going to have to do more changes to. They have to put an ice rink in there.
They have to basically retrofit it for hockey.
Exactly.
Point, yeah.
So he's not interested in purchasing the team, and he's not interested in fronting more money to renovate the building again. So
there was a joke on social media this week that technically, if you're looking at the map, Salt Lake City is North Phoenix.
Yeah, but also it's close enough where the conferences don't need to be realigned, the divisions don't need to be realigned.
No.
It's in the same time zone.
Yep.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Denver is much closer.
Yeah. So
like, it works out very well. So here's the catch, though, and here's where things get messy now.
Also, I do want to say, like, of course, Gary Bettman's not going to say anything if they're going to force a sale. He doesn't want to tank the value of the asset.
Right.
And if the NHL is going to take it over and sell it, he still doesn't want to tank the value of the asset.
Right. But here's the problem, though. Are you ready for this? NHLPA Executive Director Marty Walsh is finished with this garbage, saying, quote, I have serious concerns with Arizona. I think I've made public statements, a lot of them, and I made one today that I'm extremely disappointed in the ownership of Arizona, the president of Arizona. They have not reached out to the PA to talk about the situation in Arizona is. Since I've been here, we've been working very closely with the league, been working to grow hockey. We have a team in Arizona, he continued, that doesn't seem interested in having a conversation with the union that represents the players that play on that team. Unfortunately, we have had two unofficial deadlines to come up with some movement, and we have gone past both of those. So I'm interested in seeing what the owners of Arizona have on their mind. Mm-hmm. It's not just about buying a piece of land. Okay, you can buy a piece of land, but how long will it take you to permit the land? Do you need a referendum? Do you need to mediate the land? There are lots of questions. Unquote.
This is what happens when you get a politician to be your union boss.
Marty Walsh knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's right. I mean, even if they do get the land, we're talking years before there's an arena there.
Yeah.
Years.
Obviously, you've probably seen the results of the players' poll and all the comments that came out of that, right? Like, the comments regarding Mullet Arena specifically, where players did not hold back in their criticisms of that rink. And you gotta know that the other 31 teams are owned by billionaires. Billionaires do not like to throw their money at somebody else's asset. they are probably getting very, I guarantee you, they are very fed up with bankrolling the Coyotes and subsidizing that franchise.
I'm going to tell you right now that even if they do buy this, even if they do get this appeal in to put this lineup for auction, there might be a problem with this. Because apparently Governor Katie Hobbs had one of the lobbyists for the Coyotes working for her, administration, and did a land deal in order to get the Coyotes the best possible option for them during the Tempe setup.
Uh-oh.
In other words, there could be a lot of people getting in a lot of trouble for the over the Ethics Commission in Arizona.
Like,
you can't go and work for a company and then join the government and give that company a break on land.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. I honestly think that the time has run. There's a lot of like Arizona-based podcasts and Arizona-based YouTube channels that are coping super hard with all of this news and everything that's going on, particularly with like the news out of Salt Lake. Like, this, the time is up. Like, we are probably, like, I think before the end of the season, we're going to have an answer.
I think you're going to see the NHL make a decision probably right before the playoffs, just to make sure that everybody knows what's going on for next year.
Yep.
I don't know if it's going to be a, we're going to take over, or we're going to sell you to Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy from Salt Lake City has been pretty vocal that he wants a team in there. Although, again, I don't know how that's going to happen because the people in Salt Lake City don't go and watch the Utah Grizzlies anyway. So I don't know if an NHL is going to be their draw as well. But we'll have
Utah
to see.
Jazz, not Grizzlies. Memphis Grizzlies.
No, the Utah Grizzlies is ECHL team.
I forgot about the ECHL.
Right, that's exactly it. So does everybody in Utah.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, I think they're going to make a decision because it's going to be, all right, we've given you four more extra months and you've done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We're done. Like, we've got to make a move here now.
Yeah. And I think that it is the right now. So we could see a situation where.
But this is essentially the Winnipeg Ice all over again, though.
Yep.
We made a promise to build an arena. We didn't do anything to build an arena. Oh, you're going to lose your team now.
We didn't think about it. We didn't plan ahead and understand what all the requirements are to do something like this.
Right.
And we took a 6-year process. We tried to do it in 2. Oh no, it didn't work.
And then we fumbled our way through the next 3 or 4 years going, "We'll get it done. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Don't worry. We'll get it done." Oh, we didn't get it done.
Exactly. But like we know that Atlanta is going to be back on the map soon.
Why?
We know it's going to be there. All the chatter's about the new rink in Atlanta and the ownership group and whatever. And
is that
never
full circle? Does that count as full circle if the Jets go from – if Atlanta goes to the Jets and the Jets go to Atlanta?
Maybe.
But that's what I'm saying.
We're just holding on to
them. It's just full circle on that one, right?
But like that, you know, we're going to need another Eastern Conference team somewhere. So if somebody probably moves from the West, like Detroit goes back to the West, the Eastern or back to the Western.
I don't think you're going to see Atlanta get a team. I think they're going to hold out for big money in Atlanta. Same way they're going to do in Houston.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see Salt Lake City
setup. I'm 100% certain that we're going to see hockey in Salt Lake City within the next 2 years as they, cause they want to build the stadium.
Yeah.
But that means like, it looks like Atlanta and Houston are going to be expansion spots down the road.
Right,
which makes sense.
Wants
the expansion dollars, and at least
they might need them as well.
Yeah,
after Bell basically made it clear today they're not going to be bidding on the NHL.
God.
We'll talk about Bell in a second.
But I think we're finally reaching a point with all of the reports that have come out, Marty Walsh being much more... It's so nice that the union boss is actually out there doing something.
The fact that he has the same messaging, though, that a lot of people within the NHL circles and a lot of the players feel, though, I think is really good, though, because it shows that the PA has a distinct and genuine care for how this game is being run.
Yes.
And I know that the NHL, the whole CBA was, oh, we're going to be partners. But he's actually coming forward and going, you know what? If we're going to be partners, then put your foot down.
Exactly.
Like, do your job.
It's so refreshing. What did Donald Fehr actually do?
Besides cash paychecks?
Nothing. Exactly. But I think with the conversations and the reports that we're now seeing out of all the reporters and the insiders, I time is out.
I don't disagree.
It's gone.
I think you're out of time, out of chances, and It's time to move on from Arizona. Again, Arizona, you might be able to circle back to Arizona at some point if there's ever an arena built there.
I think that's potentially their long-term hope.
Right, but...
like, hey, Murillo's or whoever they have lined up to be the new owner, you know,
right.
Go for
it.
Like, we're going to... we'll be back.
I get it. Like, we'll come back to you at some point. But
yeah.
Speaking about coming back to places, 2025 Winter Classic location and teams were announced last night, and I won't be watching because this is absolute garbage again. But the St. Louis Blues will travel to the Windy City to meet the Chicago Blackhawks at Wrigley Field on presumably January 1st, 2025. I say presumably because there are three bowl games that day.
Nice.
So we have no idea when this game is going to be played. But again, I will probably not be watching this because I find it absolutely shocking and appalling that the Blackhawks are continually rewarded with sizable events after the NHL was reportedly so appalled and outraged over the sexual misconduct they had for
Wait,
so long.
You mean Chicago is getting an outdoor
problem.
Game?
I don't have
Chicago's
a problem with
getting
Bedard.
An outdoor game? Wow.
I don't have a problem with them getting Bedard. I understand how the lottery works. But at the end of the day, why are we rewarding a garbage franchise?
Also,
again,
like...
I don't care if the Blackhawks travel to St. Louis. Put it in St. Louis. But stop giving Chicago all the economic windfall from this.
Yes. But also, why do they... like? What? Why does the NHL think that they are still a draw?
Why are we putting two bottom feeders in a Winter Classic game?
Oh,
These two teams are awful,
I cannot wait to see the 17th horrible rendition of a Chicago Blackhawks outdoor jersey... and to watch them play horribly against a bad St. Louis
team. There's
still
two teams out there that have not played an outdoor game. And one of them is just up the road in Ohio.
Like, but they keep trying to go back. Like, I'm sorry, NHL, Chicago has not been a draw for half a decade.
Again, I don't understand. I don't understand why we keep trying to force all these outdoor games down people's throats, though. Nobody cares about the Stadium Series. They look like garbage. They play like garbage. Nobody cares about the Winter Classic. It was proven with the ratings this year, lowest ever in the history of the
Players
game.
Players don't like them.
Like, nobody cares anymore. It's time to... It was a great fad for a while. Let's get rid of it.
Yep. Bring it back in you know, 10, 15 years.
But if you're going to do it now, do it for significant events. Like, if you're going to have a... Like, again, say a team's... Again, I don't know if...
Like a centennial.
I don't know when Detroit's coming up. Exactly. But when Detroit's 100th anniversary comes up or whatever it is... Then Detroit gets an outdoor game, and they can pick their opponent.
I just realized something.
Uh-oh, what did you realize?
There is going to be another Chicago Blackhawks outdoor game in 2 years, because in 2 years it's their centennial.
Yeah, I know, their 100th year, I know. That's garbage. Oh, well, what can you do?
Have the Blackhawks play their entire season outdoors
just
at this point.
Moving to Wrigley, we're good, let's do that. If anybody didn't catch it, we were promoting, we didn't do a lot of promoting of it, but we did a little bit of promoting last week of the PWHL 3-on-3 showcase. Not sure if anybody caught it, though, but friend of the show, Savannah Harmon, absolutely lit up the showcase as she had 3 goals and 2 assists in a 5-2 victory, or 5-3 victory, excuse me, for Team King over Team Kloss.
Nice.
She legitimately was in on every single goal for the team. We told you she was good, but she kind of went out there and... owned the place for one night.
I feel like we can use that and say, hey.
I'm not saying, and again, she wouldn't tell us if she's going to the All-Star game. Now that we know that she went to the All-Star game and lit it up.
But maybe, you know, coming on this show is a little bit lucky.
We're going to have to talk to her and maybe Carla and tell them that needs to have some more people in here, but whatever.
Do you want
to
win the championship? Have all your players come on our show.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you guys are looking for a boost for the playoffs, we got a show for you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play the Melbourne moment early here because this is ridiculous, and I know you're going to get a kick out of this, man.
Okay.
You're going to love this story. This is ridiculous beyond ridiculous. I'll preface it by saying I don't know if Gold Coast resident Ian Grace is a stick in the mud or if he just believes that he's the fashion police. But it seems like Mr. Grace doesn't like a specific piece of clothing being worn in his city.
Okay.
So here is the Melbourne moment.
They're considered by some to be a staple on the beaches of the Gold Coast.
But tonight there are new controversial calls to outlaw certain types of bikini bottoms around the city.
They are everywhere on the Gold Coast, where the unofficial motto may as well be, sun's out, buns out. Itsy bitsy teeny weeny bikinis everywhere you look. But now a controversial campaign's been launched to ban the skimpy swimwear from being worn away from the beach.
If all of a sudden guys started walking around and they bared their bums the same way, we'd be lambasted, castigated, all those big words. We don't do that. But then again, blokes wouldn't do it. We just don't think about that. Why would I want to stick a thong up there and show my bare bum to everyone?
Ian Grace is outraged at the ever-reducing size of bikini bottoms and wants rules limiting them to sand and surf only.
Just out of respect for themselves and for others.
Enter Gold Coast Mayor Tom Tate, staunch swimwear defender.
Going down the path of trying to ban that, I think the reaction will go, well, you'll get some more of it.
And the mayor, who happens to be up for re-election next month, might be on a winner with this one.
Locals and tourists who we spoke to today say it's a woman's right to wear whatever makes her feel comfortable, whether that's covering up or showing a bit of cheek.
I think we're past that. The age has gone and been, it's, yeah. We should be able to wear what we want, when we want. There shouldn't be a man telling me as what we should do with our bodies.
It's 2024. Wake up, Mr. Whatever your name is.
Why should he decide for me?
It seems the votes are in.
Not doing it. Not banning it.
Isabel Quinlan, 9 News.
Mayor makes it pretty clear. Yeah. Not doing it,
also,
not banning it.
Also, what's stopping you from wearing it?
Okay, so my question is this, though.
He just came up with a straw man argument that, like, oh, well, you know, if men did that, you know, we'd be like, you know, people would complain about it. It's don't think so.
Hey, if we had wings, we could fly as well. But, I mean, we don't have those either. So, honestly, if you don't like it, stop looking.
Yeah. Why are you looking at people's butts?
Stop it. Like, you're on the coast. It's legitimately a beach. You're not going to get away from it.
Like, that just tells me
but that made the
you
news.
Spend too much time looking at women's butts.
That made the news, though, over in in Australia. And I thought you'd appreciate that one.
The whole, like, itsy bitsy teeny weeny thing, that was a great line.
Well, again, she came. Full marks to them. Yeah, they're doing a good job with their setup there. But, so that was the news that I found there, and I was like, this can't be real. And sure enough, it's real. And this guy is like dead serious that he wants this stuff like turn it off. Like, I don't want to see this anymore. I don't want to see anybody walking around with their bare butts hanging out sort of thing. So yeah, I thought that would be a little fun for the start of what we can do here. But I mean, they're right though. I mean, who the hell are we to tell anybody what to wear, right? Like, we don't get to do that. I do want to make sure we also promote a little bit of the U Sports Nationals coming up in Merlis Belcher Place. The Huskies are here this weekend. If you want to go and see them, they're going to be one of the teams playing there this weekend. Here's alternate captain Sophie Lawler talking about why it's important for both her and Saskatoon to host this tournament.
So we have just an absolutely amazing setup with the Comets and the Stars. We do a lot of work with them. We really become like a family to them. We go to all their practices. We try to hang out with them as much as possible through our busy schedule. And I just think that that is such an important part of our team and part of Husky Athletics, because I'm sure many people have said that mentorship wasn't really a thing, at least for me and for women's hockey players when they were younger. I played boys hockey. There wasn't really too many role models in my city to look up to. So having that and setting that example for girls and saying, you know, if this is something that you want to do, there's actually an opportunity for you to do it, I think is so important. We went to PEI and that was my first time at Nationals, and the energy during those games and the energy of the team and the fans and the community is on a different level. And the fact that we're bringing that to Saskatoon, we're bringing the best hockey in Canada to this community and we're giving back to them, because they give so much to us and they support us so much. And just to think about all the support we're gonna have around us and the amazing team that we have this year, it's gonna be an unbelievable opportunity, and I believe in us and our community and Husky Athletics so much, and I just know it's gonna be amazing.
So there you go. Going to be a great tournament out there in March. I highly recommend you go and check out huskiestickets.com if you're gonna go in, or .ca, I believe, huskiestickets.ca if you're going to go and get out there. Mm-hmm. I think that's the site. Let me just look it up here. But legitimately, they are going to have a good time out there. They're going to have a good time hosting that. There's going to be 8 great teams out there, 7 plus Saskatchewan in terms of what's going on. Saskatchewan going into the playoffs this weekend in terms of getting everything going for that. So, not this weekend or whatever, but it could be. Mm-hmm. It could be, depending on what the results are this weekend. This could be a first-round matchup, so... in terms of Manitoba, the female team anyway, battling against the University of Saskatchewan, as they are in fourth and can't move up at that point. So Huskies.usas.ca is probably where you want to go. That's the easiest place to find one anyway. I don't know if you saw this, Jay. Springfield Thunderbirds in the AHL.
Yes.
In 2 days are going to bring back a tradition that they haven't done. Well, they've done it basically every year. Mm-hmm. But they're going to bring back a tradition they've done annually as they rebrand, celebrating their Springfield nature.
Okay.
By turning themselves into the Springfield Isotopes. And their logo is fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
As it's the Springfield Thunderbirds logo, and it has three eyes as if as the three eyes in the fish in Springfield.
Nice.
So this is now, I guess it started in 2019. So again, hasn't been going on forever, but it's been.
But I feel like they did it. Like,
they've done
the
it a
prior
few years.
Franchise did it, right? Like Springfield.
They
Falcons?
May have. They may have, but Simpsons writer and executive producer Al Jean, in an interview with NHL.com, called the move, quote, really cool, joking that we finally now know where Springfield is, unquote.
<That's great. laughs>
So kind of cool to see that, but the logo is going to be kind of awesome. So if you're keeping an eye on hockey anywhere this weekend, on the 10th, that'll be Saturday, check out the Thunderbirds playing as they'll be hosting, just trying to see who they're going to be hosting that year. Hershey Bears that night. So there you go.
Nice.
So it should be fun in terms of having a little bit of fun with that. I don't know if there's any, we got about 8 minutes left here now in terms of getting through a lot of this stuff, which was kind of good today in terms of moving along the show, even though, you know, I was late, no big deal in terms of what's going on. I do want to maybe run a little bit down. Oilers missed out on a little bit of history last night, or
yes.
two nights ago, Tuesday night, as they had 16 straight wins going into the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of the All-Star break, unfortunately lost Game 17 that they could have tied the Pittsburgh Penguins, the 92-93 Pittsburgh Penguins,
mm-hmm.
In terms of a win, just an epic win streak.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people have gone, okay, like that's pretty good or whatever. Okay, so with 18 games to go in 92-93 and trailing the Montreal Canadiens by 4 points in the standings for first overall in the NHL, the Penguins rattle off 17 straight wins before a 4-4 tie against New Jersey in the final game of the season.
Unbelievable.
17 straight wins. Before shootouts, before all that garbage.
Yeah.
17 straight wins. Okay, so that was pretty good. Now, before Edmonton did this, though, one other team made it to 16 wins in a row. Do you know who? And it's not a team you're going to suspect it at all.
Oh.
2016-2017 is when it happened.
Yeah, who was it that year?
It started on November 29th.
It's not Columbus, is it?
It is Columbus.
Yeah, there we go.
November 29th, 2016, Columbus beat Tampa Bay 5-1, and they were backstopped by Bobrovsky. They had, you know, Tortorella when they came in.
They had that absolute tear.
Right. It stopped on January 5th, 2017, with a 5-0 loss to Washington after the break at that point. The Jackets did defeat the Oilers, though, 3-1 in their 16th game to win their 16th in a row, so that's kind of cool. So, yeah, the Oilers had a chance to tie Pittsburgh, but missed out with the 3-1 loss to Vegas on Tuesday night there.
Still a
but
heck of a turnaround for that season, though.
But when you think about it, though, there are only three teams in the 100 years the NHL has been around, three teams to put together. It's a 16-game winning streak or longer, and one that has 17. But that's crazy when you think about all the good teams that were out there. I know Boston had that undefeated streak of, like, 35 games.
Yeah.
But a 17-game winning streak.
But the fact that one of those three is the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, again, it happens, right? It could be anybody at that point. But I just think it's ridiculous that, like, that's legitimately one quarter of your season that you've won 17 straight games. Go.
Exactly. Like, I'm surprised but also not surprised. Like, you feel like you got to think that when the second six came in when the league doubled in size, right? And you had all of those expansion teams to beat up on that, like the Montreal Canadiens didn't go on a crazy run. The Leafs didn't go on a crazy run.
Here's what
the Blackhawks were. I mean, back
well,
then they were
yeah.
okay.
Here's what makes the Pittsburgh run even crazier, though. They did it in 32 days. 17 wins in 32 days. That's less than a game between each game. Less than a day between each game.
Was that a shortened season too?
92-93, so no. That was the year that they
the year
that Lemieux had Hodgkins and They had like eight players with like 100 points that year. Yeah. Like they were just cruising.
Yep.
And then David Volek put them out in the second round of the playoffs in that overtime goal. Yep. But yeah, so they did it in 32 games. That's just ridiculous. Like I couldn't imagine doing it one month, 17 wins.
That's incredible.
So yeah. But yeah, so good on the Oilers.
Probably the best one month span in NHL history.
Undoubtedly, yeah. But I mean, just ridiculous or whatever. So Oilers started December 21st with a 6-3 win over the New Jersey Devils. Came to an end last night, two nights ago, in Sin City. Connor McDavid only found the net in that 3-1 loss. But again, they tie the Columbus Blue Jackets with the second longest win streak in NHL. And you think all the Gretzky teams, all the, you know, again, the LaFleurs, the Bobby Orrs, none of them got to 16 wins in a row. Connor McDavid and the boys did, though.
Yep, so. Exactly.
So good on them. I mean, obviously, streaks have to come to an end at some point, and certainly we're not, you know, celebrating the fact that it came to an end, but, I mean, comes to an end. Here's where things get crazy for you. Ready?
Yep.
Because of their incredibly terrible start this season, they are still 14 points behind Vancouver.
So good.
And they're now 8 points or 6 points, excuse me, behind Vegas after that loss. They're in third place after a 16 game winning streak.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Like, that's bad.
I mean, like, you basically just reversed what you had before.
They started 2-9.
You brought yourself back to, like, equilibrium.
Right. They started 2-9-1 this season. So that basically erased that terrible start to the season. But,
exactly.
Yeah. So just crazy. Just crazy in terms of what went on there. But I got a couple of minutes left. Jay, anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Congratulations to the city of Salt Lake City, Utah. You are going to have an NHL franchise.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here now.
Because
maybe the owner will go, you know what? It's the Coyotes.
Utah
we'll wait. We're good.
Oh, you wouldn't want Clayton Keller as your franchise player?
Maybe. No. I mean, yes, but no. Like, if he was coming like with like four other players, maybe. But
it's not the worst starting point, you know.
It could be. But
look what the Jets had to start with, though.
Well, but the Thrashers were the Thrashers. I mean, we knew they were bad coming in or whatever.
Yeah.
Like Coyotes, you got to go, all right, well, they got a chance. No,
back then they had, like, you know, Mike Smith and Shane Doan, and, you know, we had hope. And then we get the Thrashers. It's like, cool, you get Andrew Ladd and Alexander Burmistrov.
Well, you got, don't take anything away from Buff. You got Buff in there.
You got Buff.
Andrew Ladd.
Yeah, young Wheeler.
Wheeler, exactly.
Evander Kane.
Yeah. Johnny Oduya was in there in terms of having
a
little fun.
For like 5 minutes.
Well, whatever, but he was still in there.
Went on to win a couple cups, you know.
Andre Pavlik in there in terms of him coming over, but either way, it is what it is in terms of getting through. We'll get this out of here. Got to stay tuned for Skippy coming up at Free Range Radio right away here in terms of what's coming on next here on 101.5 UMFM. You recognize this song? Little instant karma for these five guys in London as they figure out that they're not going to probably have much of a career left after this. But for those that are legitimately wondering, single was released in 1970, and the consequences are all about, or the lyrics are all about how the consequences are of one's actions. So there's your little trivia for this. This song actually inspired Stephen King, the title for his book, The Shining.
Oh, interesting.
It's all about the consequences of your actions.
That's cool.
With that, folks, we're going to get out of here. We've got about 30 seconds left here, so we're going to get out of here a little earlier. We'll talk to you next week here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Come back for that one. McKenna Shetler from the McEwen Griffins is going to join us next week. We're going to talk to her about her final season in U Sports and get a bunch of information from her. So we'll see you next week, everybody, for that interview. We'll talk to you next week here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
so you understand the situation here.
All right, it's your lucky day.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 megahertz on the FM dial from Winnipeg.
And that is how you do that.
Amazing.
That was kind of impressive.